Business banking in South Africa is broken. And one of the main reasons behind that is the complexities of satisfying the KYC and the AML requirements needed to be able to open and transact on a bank account. Today, we have a super interesting podcast with none other than Lula, who you may know as the Neobank here in South Africa. And we're delighted to be sponsored by LexisNexis Risk Solutions, who make this whole process of onboarding customers and businesses seamless and compliant. So if you are looking at these types of solutions for your business, then please do look up our friends at LexisNexis Risk Solutions. The link is down the bottom. I hope you enjoy the episode. Business banking is broken in South Africa. There you go, I said it. Okay, I've been an entrepreneur for the last 10 years here in South Africa. Numerous businesses, numerous bank accounts with numerous different banks. And the level of service that I've experienced has quite frankly been way below par. So I'm joined today on Talking Success with Trevor Gosling, who's the CEO and founder of none other than Lula. And if you haven't heard of Lula, you may have heard of the previous brand called Lula Lend. I'm not going to delve too much at the moment and tell you what Lula does, because it's not my business, it's Trevor's. But before we start, Trevor, I'd love to get a really quick intro. First of all, thank you very much for coming on the show. I know we've sort of tried to get this scheduled for a little while. So thanks to your team for finding a little gap in your diary. Welcome. Great to have you.
Awesome. No, thank you. Thank you for having me, Darren. Great, great to be here. So maybe a little bit of a background around myself and, yeah, and how Lula got started. So, I had a fairly traditional education going down the CA route. Qualified as a CA, then spent the next 5 years in investment banking. But was always, had this innate urge to build my own thing. I come from a family of business owners. My parents were or ran their own pharmacy at least for close to 40 years. My granddad owned his and ran his own foundry. My uncle's cousins, brother, older brother at least, have all run their own businesses ever since I could remember. So I've always been around business owners, and it was really in around 2010, 2011, when my business partner and my brother Wayne and his business partner Dan founded what became Groupon South Africa.
Wow.
That it was really the spark for me that said, all right, time to get out of investment banking and to start building your own thing. So with that in mind, I took the step out of investment banking to start building my own e-commerce company. Whirlwind of a ride, but within 3 years, Naspers acquired the business. And then sort of the last sort of 3 months, because I had to come and spend time with the Naspers group, the last 3 months I was there, I really didn't have much to do in terms of that business. But it was the first time in my life I was, not distracted and could completely focus on, what I wanted to do next and what I wanted to build next.
Okay.
And I realized I didn't want to be in e-commerce anymore. It's a difficult game. Margins are thin. Solving last mile delivery wasn't of great interest to me.
Yeah.
But I loved the digital landscape and had obviously learned a lot over the 3 years. So, with that in mind, and the fact that I enjoy financial services, although, I was an investment banker or I didn't want to be long-term, at least I do enjoy financial services and the opportunities that they can present. And that's really what, pulling together financial services and digital got me onto fintech. And, back in 2014, 2015, fintech, at least in a South African context, wasn't a word that was used very widely in developed markets. It was gaining a lot of traction.
Yeah.
And so I looked at some of the business models in these developed markets and what people were doing. And I came across a couple of businesses that were looking to provide, quick and easy access to finance for SMEs. And, really fundamentally using technology. And, with my family history and having heard all the complaints around, bank support and access to funds and that sort of thing, it really just had a deep calling for me that this is where I need to focus my time and energy. And then I found a, you know, just doing research, I found an article that said in excess of 90% of SMEs that go to a bank to apply for funding don't walk away with any funds in hand. I thought that's absolutely crazy. You're telling me that more than 9 out of 10 businesses aren't you know, creditworthy enough, whatever the case may be, yeah, is to access funding. And that was really my aha moment of this is what I've got to dedicate my time and energy to. And that's always rung true at the back of my mind. At the same time I had that aha moment, I was reading it's a book called Delivering Happiness by Tony Hsieh. He was the founder of Zappos, the big online shoe company in the US that was acquired by Amazon. But his aha moment was when he saw the numbers in terms of what catalog shoe sales were doing in the US. And then, you know, it was pretty obvious that online or e-commerce was going to completely dominate that. So he always knew, you know, going through all his pain and struggles in terms of what that market opportunity looked like. And I think, you know, that sort of 90% figure for me has always rung true. So that's what got me down the road of, okay, let's develop this platform that funds or provides quick, easy access to funding to SMEs. But I'd learned a lot of lessons from our prior venture, and what I didn't want to do again was be a solo founder. So, and building a world-class technology platform, I wanted a CTO to walk the path with me.
Okay.
So I was very fortunate that Neil, my co-founder, he was back in South Africa. He had been in the UK for roughly 15 years working investment banking on the technology side. And he was looking for the next opportunity in his career, and we got chatting, and he was bought in, and it was all about taking the next steps to make it happen. The big next thing was, you know, finding the business name. We wanted to just make financial services easy and approachable for SMEs. Yep. Lula is the Zulu word for easy, so that's how we got there.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the lula.co.za domain was taken. So we slapped on a lend at the end because we knew in the early days that we were going to focus on lending. And we knew that hopefully in the future, if we had the funds available, we would be able to approach the owner of lula.co.za and acquire the website, right, which 4 years later.
So a couple of questions. When you originally set the business up, looking at financing SMEs, were you planning on financing this yourself, or were you looking at sort of bringing on a partner for sort of debt funding, or did you sort of have a type of marketplace that you would go to in terms of funders that would then sort of fund the SMEs? What was that sort of the very early stage? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs, when they're looking at sort of a lending business model, that's usually the very complex bit, is how do I get the liquidity to then sort of disperse loans?
Yeah, spot on. So we wanted to be an on-balance sheet lender. That was our focus. I wasn't too interested in the P2P space. I thought that would – then you're trying to solve too many problems. You're trying to, you know, create demand on both sides. And I thought if we could just access the funds with my investment banking experience, I should be able to structure things that make sense. And then we would effectively on-lend. I mean, that – you know, was the biggest challenge in the early days was, you know, then automatically you become a very a capital intensive business. So raising those funds. And really that was, you know, we had the business, we built the prototype, but raising that first round of investment was incredibly difficult. I mean, I thought having exited the business to Naspers, Neil and I having reasonable CVs, a good business plan, well, at least we believe that, we'd go out there and be able to raise fairly effectively, but that sort of pre-seed round was incredibly difficult. But yeah, just through sort of hustle, we were reaching out everywhere and speaking to a lot of people. I mean, we were getting laughed out of a lot of rooms because, you know, we were telling potential investors, and I'm talking more local market investors, we were saying, look, we're going to lend to SMEs, we're never going to meet them, this is all going to be online. It's going to be unsecured, and we're going to manage this risk, and we're going to be effective at it. And, you know, I think we had just gone locally through the sort of African Bank Able controversy in terms of how their unsecured consumer book had performed. And I think that was, you know, very fresh in people's mind. They didn't sort of see the difference between SMEs and consumer. And yeah, we eventually got onto the name of a guy that had been an angel investor into some microfinance businesses on the African continent, a European businessman. And I approached him on LinkedIn, you know, complete cold call. He said, send me a business plan, did that. 2 weeks later, he responds. He says, all right, I'm going to fly you and Neil out to London. Met with him, found out he was a super wealthy individual. And he was interested. And, you know, within 2 days, we had a deal with him. And the real benefit of that deal with him, and he brought a couple of business partners in from his side to invest, is that they had a pool of high net worth individuals that were just looking for places to park debt capital. And so within that first transaction, we were already able to access debt, not having to on-lend using equity, which is obviously incredibly expensive. So they sort of solved two problems in one for us to really
amazing.
Get.
Well, that's
going.
Great. I just bring this back a little bit, Trevor, because I know you said that, you know, you were talking to some investors and they were kind of, you know, effectively laughing you out of the room going, hey, this is just way too risky. We'll come back to the investment side a bit later on, because I know there's a sort of the next part of that story. But how are you answering that question? Okay, so or that concern. So an investor says, "Hey, this is way too risky. It's unsecured. You know, how do you credit score? How do you ensure that we are going to get repaid? What's going to be, you know, the default rate?" At that point, early on, when perhaps there wasn't as much technology and access to data as there is today, how are you able to satisfy investors that actually what they were investing in, the business model was solid, you were going to not have a high default rate, and, you know, collections weren't going to be an issue?
Yeah, so in the early days, it was incredibly difficult because we didn't have a track record, and I think that's essentially what we figured out, well, you know, pretty quickly. Like, to convince people, you need to have something that's live, active in markets, with a clear track record in terms of how you're performing, and we didn't have that. So we had some models, and it spoke to a lot of the theory, but, you know, no one was supporting this SME segment. So I mean, I was coming more from a belief angle. I'm like, you know, You can't tell me that 9 out of 10 SMEs aren't creditworthy in this country. Yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. So I was pushing it more from a belief angle, but until we had tangible evidence, which only happened, post this sort of pre-seed round, could we start having those conversations and people could have full visibility of, your models are working. You know, those are sort of default ratios that make sense. We would be happy to support this business.
You know, credit scoring when it comes to SMEs, you know, when we look in developed markets and we've got down at Bradstreet and we've got, a little bit more information, publicly available information where you can credit score, a business. Is that sort of available here in South Africa? How are you, without giving away too many trade secrets, I promise, how are you scoring an SME? As you said, 9 out of 10 weren't creditworthy, according to a bank. How were you able to tip the scale and actually say, you know, a larger percentage are creditworthy, and this is the reason why?
Yeah, so if you look at banks, they are, I mean, they'll do their financial health checks, credit scoring and stuff, but ultimately they're going to go, all right, what collateral do you have that we could potentially access? And essentially, if the business goes bust, we just want to know there's some sort of asset in the business that we can take over, which if you're going at it from that angle, you're never going to, evolve your credit modeling and scoring to understand what we believe is the true health of a business. So with that in mind, we wanted to ignore, you know, what assets you have in your company that's irrelevant to us. We just want to understand your transactional cash flow profile. And that's where we focus our time, attention, energy. It was really around taking transactional data, effectively categorizing that, and then modeling that, and then overlaying it with, we do have good credit bureaus in South Africa. I mean, obviously more consumer focused, but, there's a very clear link between director behavior, director behind a business behavior, as well as, you know, their behavior in their personal profile context. So you're able to draw, you know, pretty clear comparisons to a personal credit score to a commercial credit score for a smaller business.
What was interesting, and I'd love to talk about product as well. What was interesting to me, because I do my research, Trevor, and I try out as many sort of technologies or platforms when I'm doing these podcasts, just to make sure kind of I understand it, but B, if I come up with any glitches, I can sort of ask live. I'm pleased to say I didn't come up with any glitches. But one thing that did stand out to me,
sure.
When I've approached banks, now, as you can tell, I'm not from South Africa. I have lived here a long time and I'm still waiting for Home Affairs to give me my my permanent residency. That's another story. But whilst I haven't got that, I'm still here on a visa and a passport. When I've approached other banks in the past, it's like, oh, no, listen, we can't even have a conversation with you because you haven't got permanent residency. And I thought that was what I was going to get hit with when I went onto the Lula site. Now, I went onto the Lula site and I went through the process. I went through the entire process, by the way, of applying for a loan and setting up a bank account. It took me 14 and a half minutes to do the whole thing with all the documents. And it only took a little bit longer because I couldn't find my postcode. But anyway, that's my fault, not yours. But then I got to the point where it was, you know, input your ID number. Now I thought, okay, here you go. I'm going to get tripped up. And actually, it had an option saying, actually, you can, you know, if you're not a South African national, you can use your passport number, which I was like, okay, wow, this is amazing. So I've been through the whole process. And I can tell you, it's very, very slick. It was very easy. And it didn't take long at all. So when I have approached some of these other banks and I've spoken, even in a personal capacity, Discovery Bank's a really good example, or Time Bank, where they say, actually, we can't onboard you as a customer because you don't pass our KYC process because you don't have a South African ID. My understanding, and without getting into constitutional law and the Banking Act and what have you, is that, you know, if you are a resident in South Africa, you have constitutional right to have a bank account. And I've always kind of had this conversation with, you know, the neobanks. But you've circumvented, but you found a solution to this. How have you done that, at where it's specifically aimed at entrepreneurs, startup founders who may not be South African, but have chosen South Africa as their home and are here on whatever visa they're on. How have you managed to solve that?
Sorry, Darren, I think it's my connection for the last 30 seconds, I would say. I got the bulk of that.
Rob's going to edit this out.
Sorry, this is going to have to be edited out. Let me
ask the question again, and then you can answer. We can edit this bit out. Is that cool? Okay, fine. So
I was
looking at, let's talk about product in terms of Lula and what it is you guys offer. And we'll come into the product suite in a minute. But what was really interesting to me, as a foreigner who's here on a visa, every time that I've approached a bank or I've approached a financial services company for the business, I've always been told, sorry, we can't help you because you're not a permanent resident. And very frustrating. I've been here 10 years. My permanent residency application is in and I'm waiting for Home Affairs to get to the file. Where that is, who knows? But they'll get to it at some point. And actually, in a personal capacity as well, when I've tried to onboard with some of the neobanks, digital banks here in South Africa, I get to a point where it says, enter your ID number. And I'm like, I don't have an ID number. I've just got a passport number. And it's, no, we can't help you. My understanding, and I'm not getting into, you know, the complexities around banking laws and constitutional laws here. But my understanding is that someone living in South Africa, validly living in South Africa, has a constitutional right to open a bank account. And this is what I've gone back to some of these digital banks and said, and they've gone, we don't have the capability of doing that now. So my question, Trevor, is how have you, because I went through the onboarding process with Lula, it took about 14 minutes, was really, really simple. I managed to enter my UK passport number and my account was open. So how have you managed to solve that problem? Because there's going to be a lot of entrepreneurs living in South Africa who aren't South African that want access to banking accounts and fundings facilities that can't get these through traditional routes because of the reasons I've just said.
Yes, Warren. So when we started funding and went live to market, we encountered this very thing. There's a lot of non-South Africans living in South Africa who have open businesses, but they won't get support or funding from the incumbents. So we made this decision pretty early on in our journey. You know, do we have the risk appetite? Because it's largely to risk appetite consideration that we want to help, support these businesses. And it does come with its pitfalls. I mean, you know, if you're not a local resident and you haven't opened any local accounts, there isn't, you know, obviously a lot of bureau information around you and that sort of thing. But essentially the ball was in our court. Did we have the risk appetite? And we just felt, you know, there isn't a reason why we shouldn't help assist these business owners that are contributing to the SA economy. It speaks to our mission, our vision as a business in terms of what we want to focus on. And so, you know, having made that call, you know, a number of years ago, we've consistently, you know, kept in mind, you know, do we want to, when we go through KYC process, whatever the case may be, is are we going to be happy to support foreign nationals who have opened a bank account locally and we can see are quite, completely legitimate and they are trading locally. I think it comes largely down to a risk appetite, I think, from our side. But, yeah, if we get the confidence that the business is actively trading in South Africa, you know, we want to support that business, whether that business owner is themselves resident.
You answered that, which is brilliant. So thumbs up for me on that. You got a new customer. Secondly, when we come to, before we get into some of the lending products, because I do want to touch on those, there's some really interesting ones that you offer. Before we get to that, is Luna a bank or is Luna a fintech or is Luna a banking as a service offering? Are you allowed to call yourself a bank if you are not necessarily don't have the license to operate as a bank? Because I know underneath Lula, you're supported by Access Bank. They're the sort of bin sponsor of you guys, from what I understand. So are you allowed to refer to yourselves as a business bank, or how does that work? And what do you call yourselves?
So. We call ourselves a fintech to keep it simpler, but we can't refer to ourselves as a bank, but we do offer banking products. So, to your point, we don't have the license that we fall under the guise of a challenger bank. We are a neo bank. We're operating under the sponsorship of Access Bank, as you mentioned. But again, that was, you know, a call that we made, you know, do we go the challenger bank route, the neobank route? Neobank makes, you know, the most amount of sense for us. You know, obviously financially, it's a lot more cost effective going down this road. At the same time, you're getting to market a whole lot quicker. You know, we don't have to wait for licenses, over a 5-year period to be able to get to market. But most fundamentally, you know, we have control of the front end product. So we have the support and expertise of the likes of Access Bank. But essentially, you know, we're controlling that front end customer engagement piece, which for us is the, you know, what we're bringing to market in the most beneficial way that we can service SMEs. So obviously there are some pitfalls to the model, but at the same time, there are, you know, similar pitfalls to a challenger banking model. And the sort of level of compliance and complexity that you need to hold within your own business. So we felt that this has been the right road to go down to effectively offer a banking solution, banking products, but we ourselves can't refer to ourselves.
I want to come back to the product in a second, but just on this point, you mentioned sort of compliance and the regulatory side. At what point does Lula take responsibility and then hand over to Access Bank, because they are obviously answerable to the regulator and to the SARB and what have you? you do KYC. I've been through that KYC process. Honestly, it was probably one of the easiest ones I've ever done. It took seconds, and it was none of this. I've got to move around and then look to the left, look to the right. It was really, really cool. But at what point, once you've KYC'd your customer, do you then hand over the compliance and the regulatory side for approvals and sanction checking and AML and what have you to Access Bank, or do you have to do that all up front?
No, so we have to do that all up front. So where Access Bank has been involved with us, they've essentially audited and make sure that our KYC okay. process is aligned to their yep. RMCP, their risk management. And at the same time, then they also do, you know, internal audits fairly regularly to ensure we're complying with those standards. So yeah, the AML sanction checking, all that sort of thing does exist with within right. our framework. But ultimately, you know, they the big brother watching us and ensuring fantastic. That.
Right. And compliant. I guess it gives the consumer, not the consumer, but the business. I know you're not consumer business, but the businesses that you're onboarding a degree of comfort that there is kind of, you know, a big brother sort of underneath this for, you know, liquidity and compliance and what have you, right?
Spot on. I think, yeah, it adds that element of trust that we are supported by yeah. a multinational bank with,
cool.
With these expertise.
Let's delve back into the products, because I was looking at the various different sort of lending products that you offer. You offer the bank accounts, which we'll come back to in a second. But in terms of lending, there was bridge financing. There was what I would understand to be sort of more like invoice discounting in terms of a service. There was obviously some sort of capital sort of lending as well. So have I got those three right in that order? Apologies if I've missed one or not explained it correctly.
Sorry again, Darren, you dropped off for
no worries.
About 20 seconds there. I didn't
no
get
worries.
The three products.
When I was looking on Lula this morning and I looked at some of the products, so you have bridge financing or bridge loans. You have what I would probably deem as like invoice discounting in terms of a service. And then there was like a traditional sort of loan where I could sort of, you know, take a loan, pay it back over, you know, 6 to 12 or 9 months, whatever it may be. Where did those products come from? Are they all very different in terms of the model and the structure? And how do you guide your customers through actually which product they need?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yes, so yeah, the three sort of high-level credit products that we have, and this is outside of partnerships with our partners, we have bespoke merchant cash advance solutions. But for someone with a business account with us, we have a term loan facility. So this is where, you know, a business owner comes to us and they have a clear goal of what they want to purchase over, you know, 6, 9, 12 months. Typically working capital focused, but sometimes, you know, if you don't want to go through your bank to acquire a piece of equipment, machinery, you can finance it within a year, and it's a whole lot, a far easier process, you know, but you've got a clear indication of what you want to do with that capital, then customers typically go for that term product. Our most popular product is our capital facility, which is effectively revolving in nature. So, you know, you're approved for a limit. We're constantly monitoring the business in the background or through automation, understanding where they're at from a credit risk point of view. And we're maintaining that credit limit. but you can draw down on those funds as and when you please. So, you know, very easy, slick accessibility to cash flow. Whatever capital you repay, you're able to access again. So very, very flexible in those regards. And then our most recent product, LulaPay, which was launched a couple of years back, it effectively operates as a B2B buy now, pay later, where we've partnered with sort of larger sort of mid-corporate wholesalers who are looking to offer credit terms to their SME merchant base. And we say, look, instead of you guys offering the terms, the 30 days, 60 days, whatever the case may be, is let us come in, offer term and financing, and carry all that risk, and you get paid up front. So, yeah, we've seen some real success in particularly in the renewable energy space for this particular product, but it's been gaining traction elsewhere as well.
Your target market is very much SME focused. Is it more sort of product-led companies, services? Are you able to offer or disperse loans to anyone in any sector as long as they meet the sort of the basic criteria?
Yes, I understand. So that was critical for us when we were launching Lula. I didn't want to, you know, build a company that was just focused on a specific segment of the SME market. We needed to be completely industry agnostic. Obviously, the complication comes into building the underwriting models to understand a professional services company versus a restaurant versus a construction business. But that was incredibly important for us from the get-go. So we're industry agnostic, and we're able to effectively underwrite you know, any type of SME that we can help support.
Sorry, we froze. We're back. I got it. No, it's fine. Oh. It just froze at the end. No, it's fine. Sorry. It will upload all fine. Oh. Okay, so that's your market segment. And when it comes to the bank account, and I'm interested in how you position this, because you're not a bank, you're a fintech and a neobank. Now, I can set up a bank account. I have set up a bank account with you guys. It took me minutes. What does that allow me to do? And there's another question there as well, is do I still need to retain a bank account with a you know, incumbent bank here in South Africa in order to operate? Or can I literally just dump my incumbent bank and move everything to you guys? Is there a line, or what's the model?
Yeah, so maybe to take a step back on the banking side. So we were looking at, you know, what, you know, we had this credit business, we were moving into multi-product, and we were thinking, you know, what's going to complement credit effectively. And we knew we couldn't just go light into banking. Like, we couldn't just offer, for instance, a wallet, because the bulk of SME transactions in South Africa are actually done via EFT. You know, obviously there's increase in other payment methods, but EFT is still a predominant pool. So what that actually meant for us is, you know, we had to go all in. We had to build full end-to-end transactional banking capabilities. And essentially what that means is you can drop an incumbent and have all your banking with Lulus. So there's no limitations in terms of what our accounts can do. You know, what does it provide for a business owner? So the things we focus on, obviously, credit is core to our business. You know, we talk about ourselves being a credit-led neobank because we want to help fund businesses. We know that, you know, 50 to 60% of businesses are looking for funding. Not all of them, but, you know, 50, 60% is a pretty high percentage of business owners looking for access to funding. And we want to proactively support them with access to funds. So that's important to, I suppose, understand. If you're banking with us, you know, we have clear visibility of your transaction data. I spoke up front about how important transactional data is to us in our world to be able to understand our merchants. So we can be a whole lot more proactive in terms of being able to support businesses with funding if they're banking with us. Then obviously, you know, there's a number of, you know, pitfalls we see in terms of what existing banks are able to offer. But one of the key tools we believed we needed to build was a cash flow management tool. And that's Lula Flow. So if you're using our account, you'll see there's optionality to click on Lula Play and utilize that. And really, that was came from the perspective of, you know, as we're chatting to SMEs, we understood that financial literacy is pretty low, but the bulk of business owners, you know, they want to run their business. Like if you we say it internally, like bakers want to bake because they're not there to spend all the time in their finances, you know, doing month end recons, this, that, and the next thing. They, you know, that's always sort of secondary. So our thinking was like, how do we provide a product or a tool at least that can help support a business owner understand their cash flow profile, understanding that cash is king, you know, that understanding cash flow and having access to cash is the most critical thing for any business owner. So how could we make them understand it a whole lot easier so that they didn't have to delve into an Excel spreadsheet? Because the reality is, you know, the bulk of SMEs are still running their accounts through Excel or some on a piece of paper. Very few percentage-wise are actually utilizing accounting tools. So, and having access to all transactional data, you know, puts us in the prime position to be able to deliver that information in an incredibly helpful way. So Lula Flow aims to provide a very clear, concise indication of a cash flow profile of a business, but then helps project where the business is going, where there could be liquidity crunches and that sort of thing. So that's been the sort of helpful software tool that we've implemented to make sure that from day one, when someone signs up, whether you're on a free account or a unlimited account, as we call it, you have access to this tool to give you, you know, every chance of being successful in terms of understanding your business better and making
what was also interesting, Trevor, is that, you know, those companies that do have accounting systems, you know, we use Xero, you have an integration there, and it's a read-only integration. So, you know, you're able to sort of pull feeds from Lula straight into Xero and then get sort of full visibility on that. The only thing that I didn't see, and maybe this is something for the future, and we'll get onto the kind of the future of Lula in a moment, is when it comes to Forex, you know, as the world is becoming more connected, as a lot of, businesses here in South Africa are looking to service companies overseas and get paid in different currencies, and also looking to pay suppliers in other countries, whether it be for SaaS or whether it be for a product or whatever it may be. That was the one area I thought, maybe that's kind of coming in the future, and that's why I'm going to have to keep my incumbent bank to handle my sort of Forex. Is that in the works, or are you going to leave that to kind of the Forex people to deal with, and maybe partner with someone later on? What's the plan on that side?
Yeah, so I suppose, a lot's happening, a lot's being developed, deployed as we think through features. So we did a lot of homework to understand, you know, what percentage of SMEs would require access to a Forex solution, just to understand on the product priority roadmap where that sits. With our funding base, the businesses that we've funded, we were able to analyze what percentage of them were actually utilizing Forex. And we actually found it's smaller than we had assumed. It's actually under 10%. So with that in mind, we thought, all right, let's not dedicate our time and energy to a Forex solution now. It's definitely on our roadmap, but we believe there are more critical product features that need to be deployed within the sort of short term before we move to Forex. Yeah. But to your point, you know, being able to effectively service someone on the Forex side is important to ensuring that they have a full end-to-end relationship.
With things us. Like, you know, integration into, doing payroll and things like that, whether it be some of the payroll companies. Have you got integrations into things like, SARS, where, you know, you can pay your taxes sort of at a click and it gets loaded? I know there's a technical term for that, but is that, again, sort of functionality that will be coming later down the line on the sort of banking account side?
Correct, yeah. So, yeah, the things you're alluding to now, all items that are sitting within that roadmap, but it's really just the timing things. So we didn't want to wait to have every sort of feature available before we went to market. We believe, you know, there was more than sufficient banking solution there that
meets the mass need. Effective. Absolutely, makes complete sense. Now we started this conversation early on with regards to investment, and you know the early stages of you know going and knocking on sort of doors and sort of people going not a chance. We wind the clock forward quite a few years, and there was a big announcement. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was back end of last year, or was it beginning of this? Forgive me. And you raised a significant round of funding. Can you talk us through that and the journey? I know our dear friend, our mutual friend, Mr. Bossini, has been involved at some point as well. So if you could sort of talk through that. And then I'd like to finish off with a recent appointment you've just made to your chairperson, who is a phenomenal lady. I've had the pleasure of meeting a number of times. We'll come on to that in a minute. But talk us through this latest round, how that came about, what the journey was, what specifically you may be doing with this capital, whether it be, you know, reinvesting in sort of product development, market expansion, whatever it may be. I'd love to know sort of the story.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, you mentioned Bassini. So, you know, every raise has its purpose. You know, we went through our pre-seed, as I've spoken to, and then our seed. Series A was when the IFC and Kona Capital joined us. That was just prior to COVID. At that point, you know, post Series A, that's when we started thinking multi-product. So prior to that, we were really just focused on building out the credit business. Series A gave us the ability to focus on two areas. We wanted to delve deeper into partnerships to be able to provide our lending technology and embed it into partners, which we built out with the likes of a Yoko and a Takealot, Vodacom, those sorts of things. But on the multi-product side, that was the first time we started thinking, all right, let's look at full end-to-end banking transactional capabilities. Then fast forward to Series B. That was around led by Lightrock. We closed that beginning of last year. So it's been just over a year that we've had funding through them. And that's time flies. But really the focus of that capital was South African markets, banking rollout, as well as, you know, continuous feature development. So still very much with a lens on South Africa. We haven't looked to tackle any other markets at this point in time. We believe the focus that still needs to be here. We still have a lot of execution to get over the line. I mean, you've highlighted a few of the product needs that you would think of just top of mind. Those coupled with, you know, a number of others from our side that we've been thinking through, we're busy working on now. That's been the real focus. Obviously, you know, as mentioned right up front, we're an on-balance sheet lender. That comes with the reality of our lives that we need to maintain really strong solvency ratios, which means we need to have a high level of equity sitting on our balance sheet. And if, you know, we're growing at fairly high or aggressive rates, it means that solvency ratio always needs to be kept in check. So making sure we have the necessary equity investment fairly regularly is important to ensure that we can maintain our growth as well. So that's, you know, the sort of effective use of that.
So you've alluded to quite a few sort of plans for the future. Is there anything you're able to share now, or are you keeping them under wraps?
No, nothing that we've fully fleshed out. You know, as mentioned, very much a South African focus on the banking side. On the partnership side, we continue to onboard new partners. We've got early April, we have a couple exciting payment gateways that join us on the partnership front. So we are, you know, hard at work making sure that that rollout there goes successfully. So that's sort of been our business as usual, and we continue to focus down those roads. I think we haven't completely fleshed out market expansion. We will be going into another raise later this year for potential closeout sort of mid-2025. I think as we're thinking through things now, it's, you know, what does that expansion look like? And it can take a lot of forms. You know, we can go pure credit into other markets. We can go through partners. Looking at the opportunity for a full digital solution into a new market, a digital banking solution at least into a new market, off the rails of the of an Access Bank partnership, and then there's, you know, we're seeing a lot of M&A opportunity coming across the table on our side, so that could also be a potential entry point into a new market. So We don't have, you know, 100% clear visibility, but you know, we've got a very clear idea in terms of locally what we want to build out and execute on to make sure that we don't lose the you know, the opportunity to be successful in terms of what this what South African market is presenting to us at this point.
I wish you the very, very best of luck. I don't think you need luck. You've got a phenomenal team behind you, and clearly some great investors as well, and that certainly helps. And I think one thing just to recap on, you said right at the very beginning, is that you'd been through the sort of solo entrepreneur journey and learned a lot from that, and then you made a deliberate a plan to actually involve a co-founder in Lula when you founded that. And I think that's really good advice. It's very difficult being a solo entrepreneur. You know, I think if you are that and that's the way you're inclined, make sure you have someone that you can bounce ideas off, who can sanity check what you're doing, whether that be a silent equity partner or whether that be a mentor, whoever it may be. If you don't decide, or if you decide not to have a co-founder, it's really important that you have people that you can sanity check ideas on and strategies and run things by, because you can get so sort of narrow-minded or narrow-focused, and you're so in the business, sometimes it's hard to see the wood through the trees. So that was some really good advice. Lastly, if people want to find out more about sort of a couple of angles, A, becoming a customer of Lula, and secondly, potentially being a partner, so whether they have a large merchant base, whether they're a PSP or another sort of FSP that may be looking to offer some sort of credit solutions to their customer base, what's the best way of getting in touch with you guys or your team? LinkedIn, website, where's best?
Website would be the best place to go as a starting point. A lot of information shared there, you know, particularly focused on customers, but there will be a link that talks to affiliates or partner opportunities if someone's looking to refer or embed a credit solution on their side. And you can click in there and find out more. But at any point in time, emailing or phoning into our customer service center, super helpful. They can direct you to the right team that you need to be speaking to. Obviously we're super passionate about the SME landscape and businesses. So the more opportunity for us to engage.
Amazing. Well, listen, thank you so much. And please pass our thanks on to your team for getting this set up. I know it's not been easy finding a slot in your diary, so I really appreciate it. Thank you again. And I'm sure, hopefully, we can actually meet in person at some point, given we've kind of been connections on LinkedIn for all these years. Now I've finally put a face to a voice. I must say, Trevor, you're a lot younger than I thought. But anyway, there you go. There's a compliment for you.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you for thank you for making the time, and I've really enjoyed this this whole series that you've put together. It's been super informative.
I should have tested you. I didn't know that. Anyway, I'm going to let you get back to your day. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up again soon.
Cool. Cheers, Darren.